The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the News and Observer and the New York Times. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to take a look at how melting ice could change the places where we live and where we might travel. We begin first with an editorial from the editorial board of the Washington Post, which appeared in the online edition of the News and Observer on September 10th, 2022. This editorial cites a new study released in August that warns the world's ice is melting and humanity must prepare for the consequences. We begin. As this month's unseasonably high temperatures, referring to September, drove unprecedented melting of the Greenland ice sheet, experts delivered a chilling message. Get used to it. Massive stores of ice sit atop land in Greenland and Antarctica, and even if a small fraction melted into the oceans, sea levels would rise dramatically. Scientists are still figuring out how fast this might happen, but new research leaves little room for optimism. Over the course of this century, countless millions of people will have to reckon with rising seas. There are few easy answers, but humanity must, with urgency, prepare now. In a new paper in the journal Nature Climate Change, researchers estimated that Greenland's zombie ice, immense chunks destined to melt because of the changes that have already occurred, will boost sea levels by nearly a foot. The scientists calculate that some 3.3% of the island's ice sheet is bound to disappear into the oceans, much of that over the course of this century, which equates to 110 trillion tons of ice. These estimates, based on direct observations of Greenland, are more pessimistic than previous projections, which relied on computer modeling. According to the researchers, their new estimates represent the minimum that could happen if global warming there were to continue. These estimates do not take into account melting occurring in other areas, particularly Antarctica, and news from scientists on that end of the world announced this month was not good. A study published in Nature Geoscience revealed harrowing new details about Antarctica's gigantic Thwaites Glacier, a frozen Florida-sized expansion, also known as the Doomsday Glacier, because its collapse could raise sea levels by 3 to 10 feet. Scientists are still figuring out how the glacier will respond to global warming, so researchers used an underwater robotic vehicle to map how the ice behaved when it encountered different sorts of circumstances in the past, particularly where it interacts with the seabed on which it is anchored. They found evidence that ice responds quickly to adverse conditions, suggesting that pushes of rapid retreat are likely to occur in the near future. Thwaites is really holding on today by its fingernails, said the British Antarctica Survey's Robert D. Lartner, one of the co-authors. What is rapid in geological time seems slow on human timescales. The more severe consequences of melting ice caps might not come for decades or even longer. Given how little the experts know about the dynamics of these behemoth ice formations, their predictions could still be off. But the world is already suffering the effects of a relatively modest rise in sea level. One example, New York City's catastrophic flooding during Superstorm Sandy in 2012, melting land-based ice is one of the most predictable repercussions of global warming, according to the earlier communities prepare, the more likely they are to minimize the damage of future disasters. Moreover, early preparation will cost less than responding too late. Expensive engineering efforts will be justifiable for critical areas. Hampton Roads, Virginia, for example, is home for two expansive naval facilities and will require substantial investment in water management projects. Manhattan, which Hurricane Sandy inundated, causing some $19 billion in damage, is even more vital to the U.S. economy. Construction has already begun on a $20 billion project to raise parks, esplanades, and barriers along Lower Manhattan. Local and federal officials are discussing other options, such as massive sea gates that would close off New York Harbor during big storms. Even that grandiose plan might not make sense for Manhattan, as it considers various ways to keep the water out. Proposals of this sort would be less justifiable for other places. A 2019 report from the Center for Climate Integrity found that the country could spend $400 billion building seawalls to protect coastal communities. As harsh as it sounds, there are certain places where it will not make sense to spend lots of money trying to keep back the tides. Some will have to be abandoned. Smart planning is essential. State and local governments should impose building codes that account for ever-increasing flood risk, as Houston did after Hurricane Harvey flooded the city in 2017. Meanwhile, government at all levels should refuse to subsidize risky waterside development, such as providing favorable flood insurance rates for flood-prone areas. A recent reform to the Federal Emergency Management Agency's National Flood Insurance Program brought premiums more in line with the risk homeowners face, substantially raising monthly costs for some property owners and eliciting howls of opposition. FEMA projects that far more coastal areas will face high flood risk by 2100, the high-risk zone expanding 55%, so it will be a perpetual challenge for property owners and the government to correctly gauge various places' exposure. Leaders must be tougher. At some point, localities will have to refuse to keep up roads, sewers, and other services in areas people should not be living. States and localities such as New Jersey, following Hurricane Sandy, are buying up real estate in high-risk areas and converting it into floodplains and wetlands, natural flood barriers. Buyouts can be expensive for cash-strapped towns, but there are public-private models that show promise. Norfolk has explored ways to condition new construction in safer zones on developers helping to buy out properties in riskier areas. The federal government should also invest further in buyout efforts, enabling the National Flood Insurance Program to buy out homeowners rather than continually paying them to rebuild. Yet no matter how well-funded buyout programs are, some people will refuse to move regardless of the risk. This will cause political problems as people in battered communities demand government aid to rebuild in areas better abandoned. This will be true, too, in other zones that climate change renders more perilous, such as the edges of forest increasingly liable to catch fire. The more the government shelters people from the true and increasing cost of the choices they make in the face of global warming, the bigger the eventual bill for society at large. The world has been amply warned. Scientists have raised the alarm. Sea level rise is not a matter of if, but a matter of when and how much. The nation's leaders must not wait for the floodwaters to inundate their communities, or the wildfires get worse, or the droughts to become more severe, to plan for a new reality. And again, this was an editorial by the editorial board of the Washington Post, published in September. Well, as we continue our journey also in the September 10th, 2022 online issue of the News and Observer, we found a story headlined, Greenland Ice Sheet to Raise Sea Levels by Nearly a Foot. Washington Post writer Chris Mooney takes a closer look at this study. It was released in August and cited in the editorial that we just read. And there is a caption that goes with a picture on here, and I will give you start with that. A boat navigates at night next to large icebergs in eastern Greenland. This occurred on August 15, 2019. Zombie ice from the massive Greenland ice sheet will eventually raise global sea level by at least 10 inches on its own, according to a study that was released August 29th of this year. Zombie or doomed ice is still attached to thicker areas of ice, but it's no longer getting fed by those larger glaciers. Now the main article. Human-driven climate change has set in motion massive ice losses in Greenland that couldn't be halted even if the world stopped emitting greenhouse gases today, according to a new study that was published again on August 29th. The findings in Nature Climate Change Project that it is now inevitable that 3.3% of the Greenland ice sheet will melt, equal to 110 trillion tons of ice, the researchers said. That will trigger nearly a foot of global sea level rise. The predictions are more dire than another forecast, though they used different assumptions. While the study did not specify a time frame for the melting and sea level rise, the authors suggested much of it can play out between now and the year 2100. The point is, we need to plan for that ice as if it weren't on the ice sheet in the near future. Within a century or so, William Cogan, a study co-author who studies the ice sheets from its surface with his colleagues at the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland, said in a video interview. Every study has bigger numbers than the last. It's always faster than forecast, Cogan said. One reason that new research appears worse than other findings may be just that it is simpler. It tries to calculate how much ice Greenland must lose as it recalibrates to a warmer climate. In contrast, sophisticated computer simulations of how the ice sheet will behave under future scenarios for global emissions have produced less alarming predictions. A 1 foot rise in global sea levels would have severe consequences. If the sea level along the U.S. coast rose by an average of 10 to 12 inches by 2050, a recent report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration found, the most destructive floods would take place 5 times as often, and moderate floods would become 10 times as frequent. Other countries, low-lying nations and developing ones like Bangladesh, are even more vulnerable. These nations, which have done little to fuel the high temperatures that are now thawing the Greenland ice sheet, lack the billions of dollars that it will take to adapt to it and to rising seas. The paper's lead author, Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland scientist Jason Box, collaborated with scientists based at institutions in Belgium, Denmark, Finland, Norway, the Netherlands, Switzerland, and the United States to assess the extent of ice loss already locked by human activity. Last year, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which generally forecasts lower figures for total ice loss from Greenland by the end of the century, projected around half a foot of sea level rise from Greenland by the year 2100 or 2100 at the high end. That scenario assumed humans would emit a large amount of greenhouse gases for another 80 years. The current study, in contrast, does not factor in any additional greenhouse gas emissions or specify when the melting would take place, making the comparison with the UN report imperfect. The finding that 3.3% of Greenland is, in effect, already lost represents a minimum, a lower bound, Box said. It could be much worse than that, the study suggests, especially if the world continues to burn fossil fuels and if 2012, which set a record for Greenland ice loss, becomes more like the norm. But that aspect of the study offers hope. Even if more sea level rise is locked in than previously believed, cutting emissions fast to limit warming close to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit would prevent things from getting much worse. Greenland is the world's largest island and is covered with a sheet of ice that, if melted entirely, could raise sea levels by more than 20 feet. That is not in doubt, nor is the fact that in past warm periods in Earth's history, the ice sheet has been much smaller than it is today. The question has always been how much ice will thaw as temperatures rise and how fast. Melt rates have been increasing in the past 2 decades, and Greenland is the largest single ice-based contributor to the rate of global sea level rise, surpassing contributions from both the larger Antarctic ice sheet and from the mountain glaciers around the world. Greenland lies in the Arctic, which is warming much faster than the rest of the world. Higher Arctic temperatures cause large amounts of ice on Greenland's surface to thaw. While the island's oceanfront glaciers are also shedding enormous icebergs at an accelerating pace, it is the surface melt which translates into gushing ice rivers, disappearing lakes, and giant waterfalls vanishing into crevices that causes the biggest ice losses. In the past, scientists have tried to determine what Greenland's ongoing melting means for the global sea level through complex computer simulations. They model the ice itself, the ocean around it, and the future climate based on different trajectories of emissions. In general, the studies have produced modest figures. For instance, during the latest IPCC, or that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change on Ice assessment, the most likely loss from Greenland by 2100 under a very high emissions scenario equates to about 5 inches of sea level rise. Now, this represents the disappearance of about 1.8% of Greenland's total mass. Most models and scenarios produce something much lower. In a low-emission scenario, which the world is trying to achieve right now, the IPCC reports suggest Greenland would contribute only a few inches to sea level rise by the century's end. The new research obtains numbers that are high compared to other studies, said Sophie Nowicki, an expert on Greenland, at the University of Buffalo, who contributed to the IPCC report. Nowicki observed, however, that one reason the number is so high is that the study considers only the last 20 years, which have seen strong warming, as the current climate to which the ice sheet is now adjusting. Taking a 40-year period would yield a lower result, Nowicki said. This committed number is not well known and actually quite hard to estimate because of the long response timescale on the ice sheet, Nowicki said. Box, for this part, or his part, rather, argues that the models upon which the IPCC report is based are like a facsimile of reality, without enough detail to reflect how Greenland is really changing. Those computer models have sparked considerable controversy recently, with one research group charging they do not adequately track Greenland's current high levels of ice loss. In Greenland, the processes triggering ice loss from large glaciers often occur hundreds of meters below the sea surface in narrow fjords, where warm water can flick at the submerged ice in complex motions. In some cases, these processes may simply be playing out at too small a scale for the models to capture. Meanwhile, while it is clear that hotter air melts the ice sheet from the surface, the consequences of all that water running off the ice sheet and sometimes through and under it raises additional questions. Much of the water vanishes into crevices, called moulins, and travels through unseen pathways through the ice to the sea. How much this causes the ice itself to slick and lurch forward remains under debate. It might be happening at a finer scale than what the models capture. Individual moulins, they are not in the models, Colgan said. The new research assesses Greenland's future through a simpler model. It tries to calculate how much ice loss from Greenland is already dictated by physics, given the current Arctic climate. An ice sheet, like an ice cube, but at a vastly larger scale, is always in the process of melting or growing in response to the temperature surrounding it. But when an ice body as large as Greenland, picture the entire state of Alaska covered with ice that is 1 to 2 miles thick, adjustments take a long time. This means that a loss can be almost inevitable, even if it has not actually happened yet. Still, the ice sheet will leave clues as it shrinks. As it thaws, scientists think the change will manifest itself at a location called the snow line. This is the dividing line between the high altitude, bright white parts of the ice sheet that accumulate snow and mass even during the summer, and the darker lower elevations that parts the melt and contribute water to the sea. This line moves every year depending on how warm or cool the summer is, tracking how much of Greenland melts in a given period. The new research contends that in the current climate, the average location of the snow line must move inward and upward, leaving the smaller area in which ice would be able to accumulate. That would yield a much smaller ice sheet. What they're saying is that the climate we already have is in the process of burning away the edges of the ice, said Ted Skambos, an ice sheet expert at the University of Colorado at Boulder, who did not work on the paper. Skambos says that it would take much longer than 80 years for 3.3% of the ice sheet to melt. He says the study says most of the change could happen or can happen by 2100. A lot of the change they forecast would happen in this century, but to get rid of that level of retreat would require several centuries more, perhaps, he said. Future ice losses will be greater than that of the amount if global warming continues to advance, which it will. If the massive melt year of 2012 became the norm, for instance, that would likely lead to about a 2.5 feet of committed sea level rise, the study says. Pennsylvania State University professor Richard Alley, an ice sheet expert, said the fact that researchers remain uncertain about how the planet's ice sheets will change and raise global sea levels shows the need for more research. The problems are deeply challenging and will not be solved by wishful thinking and have not yet been solved by business as usual, he said. But Alley added that it is clear that the more we let the planet warm, the more seas will rise. That rise can be a little less than usual projections or a little more, or a lot more, but not a lot less, Allie said. Well, if you take a moment to consider what we've read so far, you realize that we are talking about a lot of ice, but it's not just melting ice that's making headlines. In our next story, writer and photographer Jason Gulley provides a stunning look at the hidden mysteries of glacier caves. This article, published in the ongoing New York Times series, The World Through a Lens, features people who both write and are photographers. And this particular one appeared in the September 13, 2022 issue. At the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, with travel restrictions in place worldwide, we launched this new series, The World Through a Lens, in which photojournalists help transport you virtually to some of our planet's most compelling places. This week, Jason Gulley shares a collection of images from glacier caves in Alaska, Greenland, Nepal, and Svalbard. And again, let me point out, this was in September of 2021 that this article appeared. The article begins, I was dangling from a thin nylon rope some 250 feet from the bottom of an icy shaft. Looking up, I noted the spindrift, binding snow whipped into a frenzy by howling winds that was sandblasting the entrance some 20 feet above me. I was glad to be out of the weather, hanging in near silence. As my eyes adjusted to the lower right, I found myself staring down into the chasm that was far bigger than anything I thought we might find beneath the surface of the Greenland ice sheet. All I could think was, this shouldn't be here. It was 2018, and I was on an exhibition with Will Gadd, a Canadian adventure athlete, to explore moulins, or giant vertical caves, in the Greenland ice sheet. Will was already at the bottom of the shaft. From my vantage point, he looked like an insect with a headlamp. At first glance, Will and I were an odd pairing for an expedition. Will is one of the world's top professional ice climbers. He's sponsored by Red Bull. He's won the X Games, ESPN's extreme sports competition, and hung out with Jimmy Chin, a professional mountaineer and filmmaker. I, on the other hand, am a geology professor at the University of South Florida. I teach undergraduates about the physics of groundwater. I've hung out with scientists, and we don't exactly share the same social circles. I ended up in Greenland with Will because he wanted to make an expedition film that focused on attention on climate change. Will is in his mid-50s. Over his long career, he has seen climate change erase ice climbs and shrink glaciers. He pitched the film to Red Bull. They liked it, and so Beneath the Ice expedition was born. Will roped me in because I wrote my Ph.D. dissertation about glacier caves and have been studying them for more than 15 years. I was supposed to be the expert, or science expert, but I sure wasn't feeling like one staring into that inexplicably large hole. I began my accidental journey to glacier cave expert in 2004 as an undergraduate geology student at Eastern Kentucky University. A mutual friend invited me on a rock climbing trip with Dr. Doug Benn, a glaciologist from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. While I was skipping classes to explore and map caves near campus, Doug was studying how the warming climate was melting Mount Everest's glaciers into the networks of lakes. Some of these lakes drain catastrophically through the caves in the ice, occasionally with devastating consequences for villages, dams, and hydroelectric facilities below. Glaciologists didn't understand how these caves formed and therefore didn't understand what controlled lake drainage. Between climbs and later over beers, Doug and I became convinced that we could understand how glacier caves in the Everest region were forming if only we could explore and map them. While I'd never seen a glacier and Doug had only briefly visited a few caves, we figured that combining Doug's glaciology and mountaineering experience with my background in cave exploration and mapping might help us figure out how to explore some of the world's highest caves and probably even survive the expedition. Our first expedition, which we went on in November 2005, we spent around 7 weeks exploring and mapping glacier caves at elevations above 16,400 feet in the Everest region, including caves that were a short hike from Mount Everest Base Camp. Gasping for breath in the thin air, we survived rock slides, ice falls, and collapsing cave floors, and we slowly learned the Glacier Cave's secrets. Glacier caves in the Everest region, we discovered, were forming along bands of porous debris in the ice. Water from lakes on the glacier surface would flow through the debris bands and melt the ice around them to form a cave. The caves could then rapidly enlarge as the rate of melting increased, allowing entire lakes to drain through them. Having unraveled my first scientific mystery, I was hooked. I completed my undergraduate degree in 2006 and began working with Doug and a growing list of adventurous collaborators to explore and map dozens of other glacier caves in Alaska, Nepal, and Svalbard. And Svalbard, by the way, being in Norway, first as a graduate student, later as a postdoctoral fellow, and finally as a professor. Along the way, I learned how to photograph the frozen darkness so that I could share our findings with scientists who lacked the technical skills sets to venture into glacier caves. The discoveries were made scampering beneath the world's glaciers over the next decade, and they helped us document the role that glacier caves play in mediating how glaciers respond to climate change. In Nepal, where thick blankets of debris on glacier surfaces should insulate glaciers from melting, we found glacier caves were melting ice below the debris. Caves were turning Everest glaciers into Swiss cheese and rotting them from the inside out. In other parts of the world, including in Alaska and Svalbard, glacier caves followed fractures in the ice and funneled rivers of meltwater to glacier beds. The surge of summer meltwater lubricates the contact between the ice and underlying rocks and causes glaciers to slide faster than they would if meltwater wasn't present. While I'd explored glacier caves around the world before working with Will, there was one place I hadn't gotten to explore, the inside of the Greenland ice sheet. The Greenland ice sheet extends more than 650,000 square miles, roughly the size of Alaska. If it melted completely, it could raise the sea level by 23 feet. Each summer, rising temperatures transform the frozen surface of the edge of the Greenland ice sheet into a network of rivers and lakes. All of the rivers and many lakes disappear into moulins and continue flowing toward the ocean along the intersurface or interface of the ice sheet and the rocky bed beneath it. As the flow of meltwater into that interface increases, friction between the ice and bed is reduced and the ice sheet speeds up, sending ice into the ocean faster than in winter. Some glaciologists are worried that as climate warming triggers more melting and new caves form in areas of the ice sheet that probably didn't previously melt, increased lubrication might cause the ice sheet to dump ice into the ocean and raise sea levels faster than expected. With funding from the National Science Foundation, I was able to establish remote camps to study how the water flow into the caves was affecting the motion of the ice sheet during summer, but I really wanted to return in the fall when cold temperatures shut off the meltwater supply to moulins and make them safe to explore. So Will Gadd sent me an email and asked if I wanted to do something cool in Greenland's ice or glacier caves, and I was ready to go. I wanted to see if the ideas I developed about glacier caves from other glaciers worked in Greenland. Having worked in so many different glacier caves, I thought I had figured them out, but as I dangled in the middle of that massive icy shaft in the Greenland ice sheet, perplexed by its sheer size, I realized glacier caves still held surprises for me, and that there were more mysteries to solve. So I suspect we'll be hearing more in the future, okay? And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope that you've enjoyed it and learned a lot more about what goes on when it comes to ice in our traveling world. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. I remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.